Ever notice that everything you ever thought would make you happy ever after didn't? Ooh, me too. It turns out Sean Cassidy was not my soulmate. Orgasms only last a few seconds and money does not buy happiness. Hi, I'm Dr. Cheryl Fraser and welcome to Sex, Love, and Elephants, the weekly podcast where we explore relationships, mind, and the meaning of life. A place where you are normal if you feel like something's missing, even though you have it all. Because guess what? Happiness is an inside job. How do I know? Well, if a Buddhist nun and a sex expert had a baby, I'm it. I'm a psychologist, sex therapist, and author. I've meditated for 12 hours a day for months at a time. I've studied Tantra in Tibet, and I've taught for people like Tony Robbins and Jack Canfield and helped thousands of couples reignite passion. My mission with a loving heart is to kick your ass off the couch and into awakening. And here's the secret. If you want to cultivate wild love that lasts, compassion and curiosity, and the superpower of being happy for no reason, first, you've got to meet your elephant. So let's go. Well, hello, I'm Cheryl, and I'm so delighted you're here for this second part of a special two-part episode, kicking off the new year with intentions to learn how to manage our mind and our emotions better, to learn how to approach our relationships better, to learn how to simplify our life and our meditation practice to only two words, let go. If you didn't catch the last episode, let me briefly summarize what we're doing here. I gave a talk in December at a silent meditation retreat, a three-day retreat I taught, and I'm using that talk here to help all of us reset our minds at the beginning of this year around how to let go of what we're holding, how to let go of what we're hurting, and how to heal and replenish by creating space. So last week's episode gave you the first half of that talk that I gave. You don't have to go listen to it for this week's to make sense. But if you don't listen to it first and you haven't heard it first, I talked a bit about a story that I'll refer to in today's episode as well of two monks walking. They get to a stream. There's a noble woman who needs to walk across the stream. There's no one to carry her. Monks in that tradition are not allowed to touch a woman. The older monk picks up the woman, piggybacks her across the stream, puts her down, and walks on. The younger monk is completely scandalized and freaked out that this monk has broken vows, and he stews about it for hours. He finally brings it up, and he says, what's with touching the woman? You're going to get kicked out of the order. What happened? And the elder monk, who's wise and more awake and more enlightened and more free from suffering, says to the younger one, I put that woman down hours ago. Why are you still carrying her? Why are we still carrying the hurts, the pains, the losses, the hurt feelings, the slights, the heartbreaks, even the brutal losses through death, through cancer, and more? When we carry them on our back, we suffer and we're unable to show up in the present moment of this great and glorious life. So without much further ado, we're going to enter into the second half of that talk I gave. Again, you're welcome to listen to the last week's episode, the first half first, or just plunge in and see what is going to be revealed to you in this wonderful elephant episode, how to be happy for no reason, how to heal by letting go, by clearing out. So there's space to replenish our bodies, minds, spirits, souls, relationships, so we can have more space to be more free. Here we go. The first story, the monk who sees a need, fills the need, lets it go and moves on without any suffering. We want to be that guy. We don't want to be, and all too often I am, and I suspect you are the other one who's, this is upsetting and I don't know what to do, and I'm going to build stories for 2 or 3 hours and then spill it out and realize I had the choice to also let it go, whether I understood it or not. It could be, well, I guess he's got a good reason. The second story, our cup, when it's so full with ideas, with concepts, with words, sometimes we can't receive the replenishment we need. There's another story of, I've forgotten which teacher it was, but a teacher from maybe 100, 200 years ago, I think in the Zen tradition, I'm not entirely sure. This is a story of a teacher.
an actual more recent teacher. Anyway, he had a rule that after dinner he would go for a silent walk out to kind of look at the land, and each evening apparently he would invite one of the monks to come with him. There was a single rule. You were not allowed to say a word. Not allowed to say a word. That was the rule. So he goes for a walk. One of the junior monks is invited to walk with him, and it's a particularly glorious evening, particularly beautiful sky. Incredible sunset, just radiant, like God himself painted the sky. And the young monk forgets himself for a minute and he says, "It's so beautiful." And the teacher turns and walks straight back to the monastery and says, "You can never come on a walk with me again." So the young monk's, you know, pretty devastated that he made a mistake and a little bit puzzled as to why. And so a medium monk goes to speak to the head fellow and says, "You know, Billy," it's clearly the monk's name was Billy, "is, you know, very upset, and he didn't mean to cause any offense. He was so transported in wonder of the beauty of the sunset, that's why he commented on it. Would you give him another chance?" And the teacher says, "You can't see the sunset through the words. You can't see the sunset through the words." What he's pointing to there is when we're caught in our idea about something, a reflection on something, a once removed from the direct experience, we're no longer in the direct experience. And for all sorts of reasons, that's important. So that's partly why we practice silence on this retreat. And as I said earlier, and as you've no doubt, I suspect anyway, experienced this afternoon, just because we're practicing verbal silence with our mouth, with making sounds outside of ourselves, does not mean it's silent in here. So one of the things I'll refer to with various languages at various times, but often with the phrase, what's the direct experience right now? What is the experience of sunset? Without commenting on sunset. What is the experience of sunset without taking a selfie so you can show all your friends how great the sunset is? What is the direct experience of being in flow with sunset? In your meditation, what's the direct experience of this breath? And the mind will no doubt be telling stories some of the time, having thoughts some of the times, running vast narratives while you're attempting to meditate. You're still meditating. You're just meditating in a noisy environment. That's okay. It doesn't mean you're failing. But the direct experience right now, close your eyes for a sec. What's the direct experience in your left elbow right now? Now, the way I happened to be sitting when I asked you that, my left elbow's pressed with a bit of pressure into the arm of the chair. So when I stopped and went to the direct experience of left elbow, I could feel the pressure where the side of the elbow was pressed on the chair, and then a different amount of pressure where part of the next centimeter of the elbow wasn't pressed as much or making as much direct contact. Direct experience of elbow. When I just told you the story about what I experienced, I'm once removed from the direct experience. So just observe that this weekend, how much the mind is what I like to call a story-making machine. Now, that's all sorts of reasons for that, many of them incredibly helpful. It's how we navigate life and our jobs and our parenting and our understanding of the world and ourself in it. It doesn't mean never make up stories, never interpret data. It doesn't mean that at all. But it means strengthen the ability to just be in the direct experience. If there's a dart and we're simply in the direct experience of the dart being uncomfortable, we can directly know to change it. Without getting into a song and dance of interpretation and more darts. So, I haven't even got there yet. What are some of the things you can let go of? One, it might be hurt feelings, stories from the past that were painful or worse. Many of us have had traumas in our past. Many of us are having traumas in our lives now, you know? Loss of loved ones, loss of a child, loss of a marriage, diagnoses of frightening body things, frightening medical things, loss of a lot of our lifestyle isn't quite the right phrase, but meaning that the conditions and the restrictions that we needed to do for safety in the age of the COVID virus has really changed a lot of things. And a lot of those are really tough on us all. Can we let go of one thing that we're carrying that's not helpful? Can we put it down at the other side of the stream and walk on? And those of you in retreat, those of you watching not in retreat, please do this as well in your own backyard. But we're on this lovely property. There's a bit of forest. There's some sticks on the ground. There's a lake right there. I invite you, and I'll remind you of this tomorrow in one of your break periods or the meal periods. Take this and make it tangible. Find a stick or a rock or several sticks or several rocks. And if you can, I don't know how well it would work, write on it or scratch on it or simply think putting that memory on that stone or on that stick. The thing that you'd like to let go of. I'd like to let go of how annoyed I feel with my sister because of XYZ. I'd like to let go of my shame and my embarrassment that I was fired from my job. I'd like to let go of my belief that I'm not very smart. What do we want to let go of? The past? Do we want to let go of certain hurts we're carrying? Do we want to let go of certain beliefs we have? Do we want to let go of worrying about the future all the time? Good luck with that. It's not going to make one whit of difference if you worry about it. The future's uncertain. How much time do each of us spend worrying about what might happen? And I'm not talking about checking your brain at the door and being a dope. Thinking things through in a wise manner, anticipating outcomes and choosing a wiser one, that's intelligent, that's discriminating wisdom. Don't check your brain at the door. But I'm talking about the kind of pointless worry and catastrophizing that the mind so often does that doesn't get us anywhere except wrung out with cortisol and adrenaline and less equipped to handle the challenges that are going to come in the uncertain future. And so this weekend, once a dozen times, take a stone, take a stick, write on it, scratch on it, or think, or symbolically put in it something you want to let go of, and then throw the stone in the lake or throw the stick in the forest. Let's imagine that there's a big, those cement blocks that they build stuff on, foundation blocks or something, whatever they're called. They're heavy, right? I don't know how heavy they are, 50 pounds or something. So imagine there's literally one sitting here right now. I'm a little stronger than I look, so I'm able to pick it up, and it's hard. It's hard, right? And you guys say, Cheryl, that looks really heavy. And I go, it's not now. That's a really important gesture because we're all carrying things that are really heavy. Really heavy. It could be as simple and as profound and as aching as the loneliness of the last 2 years. The losses of the last 2 years, the small losses, even those of us in the room that are lucky enough not to have major losses, which so many of you have had. And it is heavy, isn't it? Even in our lives where we're lucky, where we've got homes, we've got family, friends, community of some variation, we live in a beautiful part of the world with a lot of political and life freedoms. Our children right here don't generally die when they drink the water coming out of the tap. We're so lucky. And yet sometimes we look at a friend, a neighbor, a loved one, an enemy, and we think, boy, they're carrying a lot. That looks so heavy, Cheryl. Not now. Practice it. Practice it. Get this in your body. Make it visceral. Throw some sticks, pick up a big stick and write my worries about not being good enough, or mentally write it on there and throw it. Be careful, don't chuck it at people. I'll get Buddha fired again. Just, behave yourselves. But stones are satisfying because you can hurl them into the lake and they splash and they sink, right? Lovely symbolism. Throw it, let it sink. Does that mean you'll never ever worry about that thing again? Probably not. Some of them, it may actually dissolve it. It may actually flush it through the pipes. It may actually put it to rest. But it's the process of training the body and mind, letting go, letting go, letting go. This too shall pass. This will not be here in 100 years, because we won't be either. At least metaphorically, we're training the mind. Symbolically, we're training the mind that it doesn't need to hang on to the litany of losses. It doesn't need to hang on to all the hurts. We don't need to be so stuck in the past, and we don't need to spend so much of our time worrying about the future. The more we can show up here and now, it's where the only freedom is. So practice that in this beautiful weather. Throw some stones in the lake. Find some sticks. Hold them. Get a good heavy one and then drop it. Walk the labyrinth. Walk the labyrinth. Probably 3 or 4 of you could be walking at a time. If you're 6, 10 feet apart, I suggest a slow walking. And you can either just be in a mindful walking practice in direct experience of your feet on the mushy ground. And or you could be doing a contemplation while you walk the labyrinth, of even just repeating mentally, letting go, letting go, letting go. Or even doing a bit more complex of a contemplation. I give you permission to make up stories about what are some things I'd like to let go of from 2021. That I was isolated more than I'd like to be. That my friend was really sick and haven't fully recovered. That my cat passed away. That my marriage changed. That my health changed. And they can be little things too. Little things can hurt a lot. And then when you get to the center of the labyrinth, the ending that is a beginning, you can symbolically imagine leaving those things in the labyrinth. Mother Tara will hold them in her heart and dissolve them into the ground to be food for beings. You're not leaving anything toxic there, even if it's toxic to you. It will be transformed into food for beings. You can also do that with an object. Pick up a stone. You may have a precious object with you you'd like to leave. I don't think there's shells around here, but certainly stones, pebbles, twigs, things like that. You can write a little note and leave it in the center of the labyrinth. Let go. Let go. Let go. This is the third noble truth. First noble truth, everything changes, and not all the changes will be in the direction we desire. The second noble truth, we will suffer when the changes are not what we desire. And the cause of our suffering is we're clinging. We're holding on to hot coals. We haven't put down the lady back at the river. We're nursing the hurt of that betrayal. We're adding darts to the first dart, and the first dart hurt. It was a bodily feeling of hurt, but we're adding more darts. The third noble truth is the cure for suffering. Backing up there, the second noble truth is the cause of suffering is hanging on. So, the third noble truth, the cessation of suffering is letting go. It sounds so easy. We know it's not easy. Unless it's a kettle, that's easy to let go of. Other things aren't. That's okay. You're not broken. You're not self-indulgent. You're not foolish. You're not self-pitying. You're human. These things hurt. We aren't trained to let go. If anything, we're trained to get a bunch of darts, put them all over us, and then go on Facebook and talk about it. Nobody's ever had as bad of a fairy trip as I just had. Would you believe? And then people can comment, oh, you poor thing. That's just awful. Let me hurl a few more darts at you. Bloody hell. If I'm not your friend on Facebook, there's a reason. It's got nothing to do with you. Facebook, not my jam. Of course, it can be utilized like any tool in a compassionate, lovely way. It can be a beautiful way to see pictures of your grandkids and celebrate the wonders of your friends. Choose your friends carefully. Defriend the ones who are frickin' throwing darts at themselves on Facebook. But we are in a culture that maybe unintentionally has gradually moved to where public displays of the things we're distressed about are a little more commonplace, and people could jump on the irritation bandwagon with us and all that. Does it make you suffer less? No. No, it just, you know, keeps the story going. Drop the story. Maybe it was a really, really terrible ferry trip, and maybe you were really unfairly and rudely treated, and maybe somebody in line lost their temper or nothing to do with you and screamed and yelled in your face. Maybe it was awful. I'm not denying that. Could have been some real darts, but what are you going to do with it? How about let it go and have a cup of tea? Maybe a piece of chocolate? Because we have choice. It doesn't feel like we have choice. It feels like we're so trapped in the negative story, so trapped in the pain, so trapped in the truth of suffering, which is true. We forget the third noble truth, which says there's a cure. Let go. If, like me, you're a regular human who finds letting go harder than it sounds, that's why we practice. That's why we practice. If you're in a sit and it feels interminable, and your body and or your mind are in distress in that meditation, you might have a really sore back or just a very anxious, upset mind, and it's hard and it's grueling to stay with the practice, and your body mind is fighting the practice, and it just wants to convince yourself that you have to pee badly enough that it's okay to quietly slip out of the room. But you stay. You're practicing letting go, believe it or not. You're practicing letting go. You're practicing tolerating the discomfort and knowing you don't have to always give in to it and make it more of a story. So some of the things that seem, perhaps to some of us some of the time, kind of odd, or maybe we're not sure what the point is on a meditation retreat. Like, what's the point of that? It's often about rehearsing letting go. It's often about rehearsing the arising and the passing away. It's about being able to watch the mind when it gets upset about something. There have been times in my life, including on retreats in my life, where if I'd got to the breakfast table, let's say, and I hadn't been able to eat any of the foods, I would have been super distressed. Because of whatever vulnerability, whatever need to be nurtured, whatever anxiety about being on the treat and wanting to feel like it was well managed and people were paying attention, and I'd filled out that form. Now I'd be kind of like, well, okay, I'll not eat, or I'll eat something else. Not every day. Just ask my husband. Goodness sakes, I'm human. But on retreat, I'm often in a pretty good mental state. I'm often fairly blissy when I'm on retreat now. And so it's just like, oh, well, that happened. That's all right. And if the same thing happened 2 days ago, I'd be like, ah, multiple dart attack. But when the mind is more happy, open, and graceful, which sometimes it is in life and sometimes it isn't, sometimes it is on retreat and sometimes it isn't. I've certainly had retreats where I white-knuckled it the whole time in like anxiety and hatred. You know, it's just life. It's stuff. It's what happens. But when we have those moments where we're able to let something go and it actually dissolves, even just a really little thing, a small, little, tiny disappointment. Oh, I was hoping for a room on the corner of the building and I'm in the middle of the building. Oh, well, it's not so bad. Just a tiny little disappointment, we let it go. Oh, that's freedom. Okay, I literally exhaled as I said it, because when we let something go, it's freedom. When we let a small thing go, it doesn't hurt anymore. When we let a big thing go, we've still got to deal with the burn, but we're not making it worse. So letting go. So teacher, I think it was Ajahn Sumedho who talked about letting go in a way. I wanted to quote you his words. Yeah, it was Ajahn Sumedho. The practice of letting go is very effective for minds obsessed by compulsive thinking. You don't have to raise your hands, but I know who you are. Pretty much all of you. The practice of letting go is very effective for minds obsessed with compulsive thinking. You simplify your meditation practice down to two words. Let go. Now, he's not just saying that. For 2 years, Ajahn Sumedho's entire meditation practice, morning to night, for 2 full years, every day was letting go. That's what he worked with every day. Let go, let go, let go. 2 years! I want to go do that. I'd be very interested to see where the mind would be after 2 consecutive years of practicing letting go. very noble being. It was another. Ah, yes. So I'd like each of us now to do a little thought experiment, just where you are. You don't have to do anything, but recall, bring to mind something from today or yesterday or this week that you didn't like or was unpleasant, might be big, might be medium, might be small, that you're still hanging on to, not necessarily on purpose and not necessarily because you want to. Something that annoyed or upset you or maybe devastated you, something that you were frustrated by. Bring something to mind. You're not going to have to share it. This is a private thought experiment. And for a moment, I want you to make it pretty vivid. So bring that thing to mind, and as best you can, recall how you felt, how it hurt you, annoyed you, maybe led to anxiety, anger, grief. Bring it to mind as clearly as you can. Your body may even start to feel some of the same discomforting emotions. And I want you to ask yourself, and I'd like you to take this contemplation out of this class tonight and work with it a little bit over this weekend. Ask yourself, what am I hanging on to? So let's say what happened is your partner or your roommate or your friend or your family member broke a promise to you. Maybe they promised to take you out to dinner. You'd been working extra hard and doing nice things and being a rock star. And they said, you know, I'm going to take you out to dinner on Thursday. And you were looking forward to it. And it was a nice gesture and you were happy about it. And then they forgot. And maybe it really disappointed you. And if it was someone you're married to, or in a deep relationship with, often it becomes a pretty big story. Not only did you forget, but you don't care enough about me. I can't trust you to keep your promises. You never follow through the stories. Lots more darts can happen. Were that the case, were that the example, and I would just say, what are you holding on to? You would have some different answers, but they might be along the line of, well, I'm hanging on to wanting it to be different. I'm hanging on to wanting my friend to have remembered their promise. I'm hanging on to have wanted to go for dinner. I'm hanging on to wanting to feel important enough, because I interpret forgetting the dinner date as meaning I'm not important to you, or whatever. There's nuances there, right? But try to dial down and think, what am I, Cheryl, hanging on to? There may be more than one. That's great. No problem. And then ask yourself, what would it feel like if I let that go? What would it feel like if I let that go? So let's say it is your romantic partner. They promised to take you for dinner. You were excited and looking forward to it. Then they forgot. And it hurt a lot and it brought up some anger and irritation, because maybe this is a repeating pattern. Maybe there's history. Maybe there's darts from the past that got reawakened. That's pretty common in any of our important relationships, friends, family, etc. And then you might say, okay, the main thing I'm hanging on to is the idea that they don't care enough about me. That's a pretty painful idea, isn't it? Someone you deeply love and rely on is important to you, doesn't care enough about me? Wow, that's a big coal. That's a big kettle of steam. What would it be like if I let that go? I'm hanging on to the story that they don't care enough about me. That is hurting me. That's the cause of suffering, hanging on to something. What would happen if I let it go? What would happen if I was able to just let go of the story that they didn't care about me? Rest in the knowledge they do care about me. Would I feel better? The answer is yes. I was actually able to let go of it, and that story went poof. And what was left was, of course they care about me. Everybody forgets some stuff sometimes. I wouldn't suffer. So there's a thought experiment. You've got two homeworks now. I'll endeavor to remind you about them in the morning as well. One of them is throw rocks in the water with things you want to let go of. The next one is do some thought experiments, and you'll have probably opportunities live time, real time. Something will happen in the retreat, or I'll say something, or something that will happen that you won't like, or you'll get indigestion from something in the food, or it'll be cold or it'll be hot. The things, you know, the impermanences. And when you find yourself a little bit distressed, or maybe a lot, ask yourself, what am I hanging on to? If I'm hanging on to, I want it to be a comfortable temperature for my body. Okay? What would happen if I let go of that? If I let go of wanting it to be a comfortable temperature? Well, I suppose I'd either take some layers off if I'm too warm, or I'd add some layers on if I'm too cool, but I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't have any negative emotion wrapped up in it. I would just adjust based on the impermanent circumstances. There's so much freedom in letting go of needing things to be a certain way, because they often won't. You notice that? You don't need the Buddha to point that one out. You'll notice all by your little selves that things are often not the way we want them to be. And we can dance in it. We can be joyful in it. Oh, this is so not what I expected. Oh, well, cool. What am I going to learn? Right? I don't know. You go to Africa for safari, and what you didn't know is they lent all the animals to New Zealand for a month. There's no animals there. That's not what you expected. Oh, well, I guess I'll look for other stuff. The cultural artwork of Africa, because I don't get to see giraffes. An elephant, after all. I mean, we laugh because that's a silly, fanciful example, but it's such a good example. What do we do when we have expectations? Oh, there's the expectation conversation. I don't think we have time for that. In brief, expectations will hurt you. When you expect things, it means you have an idea of how it's supposed to be or how you want it to be. And sometimes it will, and that will be nice. And sometimes it won't, and that won't be nice. I actually released a podcast, I think, two weeks ago entitled, If You Want to Ruin Your Relationship, Have Expectations. Because so much of our suffering is when we expect things to happen. I expected you to remember you said you were going to take me for dinner. That's not a stupid expectation. Maybe your friend should do a better job of programming their calendar so they do a better job of remembering. That would be skillful and compassionate of them. But it's the expectation that ends up hurting us. I know that gets a little tricky. We get our, yeah, but hang on a minute. These deadbeats shouldn't keep letting us down. But they will. So it's up to you to say what you're going to do with your mind around the changes. You don't have any control on whether your friend becomes more or less forgetful. You can make suggestions, they'll ignore, but you don't really have any control. You have control over maybe saying, well, Melissa said she's going to take me for dinner. Based on previous data, I will see what happens. Melissa's either going to show up at the appointed time or forget. I hope nobody named Melissa here and thinks I'm picking on you. Pretty sure there's no Melissas in the room. How does this relate to what we were doing today, Cheryl? I'm confused. Well, in the half hour before dinner, I did a modified Vajrasattva practice. Doesn't matter if you don't have a clue what that is. It's a Tibetan practice of purification. There's all sorts of secularized ideas that are similar, but we practice with the idea of bringing in light or healing nectar through the top of our head and allowing it to flow through our body and do what? Clear out obscurations, clear out things we're clinging to, clear out old hurts, clear out wounds from the past, clear out our darkest traumas, clear out the most ugly things we've ever done with body, speech, or mind, clear out our worries and our insecurities. Let go, let go, let go, let go. Some of these practices might seem a little odd and you may not be quite sure how they relate. I hope that helps link it. It's a visceral way to practice letting go and clearing, letting go and clearing, letting the purity of the essential nature be uncovered, letting the purity of this moment, this present moment, which is perfect, be seen, clearing out, letting go, letting go. Because you can't receive anything in a full cup. Remember? And I suggested earlier this afternoon a theme for our somewhat, or perhaps quite extensively, weary bodies and mind in December 2021. Our wearied spirits, maybe. Not everybody, but probably the majority. A weariness, a beleagueredness. It's been a bit of a long haul. Anybody notice? And I want you to replenish once we clear. Starting to see how this comes together. We came in here maybe with our cup overflowing with ideas and also fatigue and worries about our kids and our health and all the realistic pieces of being alive, the losses, the griefs, all the things. So if we can work this weekend to let go, or at least practice the idea of letting go, that's where it's all about. That's what you have control over. You can practice letting go. Some of the stuff's going to cling to you like crabs or something, and it'll be really hard to purify, but you're going to practice letting go. Throw some rocks in the water, walk the labyrinth, leave some things in the middle, practice in some of the meditations, this white light coming in, rinsing through, dissolving the dark clots and clumps. They come out the bottom of your feet. Practice emptying the cup of some of the garbage that we all accumulate through the pain of being human. You're not going to be, I don't think, a completely purified being at the end of the weekend. If so, you'll be fully awake, and that will be extraordinary. But we can practice if we don't quite get there yet, and then replenish. You don't have to do it in that order. We're going to do them together. They're going to weave. They're going to dance. We're going to let go and replenish. We're going to replenish and let go. You're going to move your body in yoga. You're going to be with your mind in some of the nurturing meditations. You're going to eat some nice food. You're going to look at a beautiful lake and replenish and let go and let go and replenish and replenish and let go. I wanted to say a word or two also about being lazy. I give you permission to be lazy in a healthy way. We think of lazy, I looked it up, it's got a very unpleasant definition. It's something like the disinclination and refusal to make effort or work. Well, I don't want you to be that kind of lazy, or you'll all just stay in your bed all day playing on your iPhones. Don't do that. But I found a poem about being lazy that I would like to read that is the kind of lazy I'd like us to practice this weekend. It's called Being Lazy, and I apologize to the author. In my cut and paste, I've cut the name of the author off. I'll try to find it for tomorrow because writers deserve a tip of our hat. Being Lazy by some fabulous person who shall remain unnamed. It's a very short poem. Are you ready? Laze into my laziness, loving the luxuriousness, floating forever in a less frantic way. My type A tendencies barely remembered as I float amongst others who nurture themselves. Let's make that one of the themes for this weekend. I'll read it again. Being lazy. We're going to call it wholesome lazy. Laze into my laziness, loving the luxuriousness, floating forever in a less frantic way. My type A tendencies barely remembered as I float amongst others who nurture themselves. This is one of my wishes for each and every one of us this weekend. I've got a couple others for you I'll read at other times. And so, in the moment, if it's skillful, if it's compassionate, pick up the woman in silk, carry her across the river, and then put her down and let it go. When we find ourselves unable to receive, maybe pull back, retreat, and let go of some things. Let go of busyness, let go of conversation, let go of decision-making beyond in 10 minutes I should get to yoga. And give your body and soul a chance to rest. Let go of some things. Clear some space for the replenishing we're offering you as best we can at every turn. And we're not offering it. meaning myself or Neil or the beautiful people who will lead some of the retreats, the cooks, the staff. White Tara's offering it. Mother Earth is offering it. The universe, if that's your language, is offering it. God is offering it. What your concept and your language is, it is offered. It is freely available. As Thich Nhat Hanh, I believe, famously says, happiness is available. Please help yourself. If that's all we practice for the rest of our days, happiness is available. Please help yourself. We'd be in better shape. But until we let go of the hot coal, it's harder to access the happiness that's right there all the time, right there. So let's let go and replenish. Let go and replenish. Let's replenish and let go. And it will take different forms for each of us. And that is the beauty of being human.
And there you have it, my dear darling listeners. That's the end of that talk I gave in December. I hope you have found it worthwhile. I must say, listening to it again myself, preparing it for you, really helped me here in the first week. I'm recording this on January 3rd of 2022 to really think, Cheryl, what are the things I'm hanging on to? How can I simplify my meditation practice to practicing over and over those two simple words, let go, let go, which brings us to this episode's Love Bite. I couldn't say it better myself, so I'm going to quote that wise teacher that said to the younger monk, you can't see the sunset through the words. You can't see the sunset through the words. So go for a walk today. Ideally, take your sweetheart, take a loved one, and go for a completely silent walk where you simply witness without taking a photo of it, without talking about it, without even remarking, oh my goodness, it's so beautiful out here. Just go experience what is. Let go of the words. Let go. Thank you so much for joining me for this very special two-part elephant episode. I'll be back with you next week. And you know, before you know it, it's going to be February, the month of love. So I'm going to lay some relationship and sexuality episodes on you coming up. But for now, just remember, you can't see the sunset through the words. Bye for now. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Sex, Love, and Elephants. But most of all, thank you for being part of this herd. If you enjoyed listening, please share this with a friend. And if you haven't already, I would love, love, love it if you would subscribe, rate, and review the show on your podcast player, because it really helps all the other elephants find us. If you have any questions or comments or maybe an idea for the show, or you'd like to be a guest, reach out to me directly at drcherylfraser.com, where you can also sign up for weekly Love Bites, science-based tips for creating love and passion that last a lifetime.